Good afternoon. You get the opportunity now that they either saved the best for last or the one you're not going to have any trouble getting up and walking out of. So we'll see how this goes. This past summer, a little bit about myself. I am not a research agronomist. I am a field CCA. I deal with growers in a 10-county area, and I supervise our sales staff and our nutrient management staff, as well as crop protection and other areas. But one of the areas that I've concentrated on the last few years is nutrient management. And one of the things we looked at is we wanted to see real-world scenarios that would benefit our growers in our area. We wanted to find out just exactly what we were losing through those tile drains. If we were losing if we were losing huge amounts of nitrogen. We didn't think we were losing phosphorus because physiologically you shouldn't be losing phosphorus through the tile drains, but I've seen research that's been done throughout the Midwest where they are, data is showing that up to 30% of the phosphorus that's being lost is through tile drains. We wanted to see if that was actually the case. And we wanted to put this together in a usable form that farmers could use, that our growers that were involved in the study, that we could present to industry and groups like this. So that's kind of what we looked at. In Illinois, we have the nutrient loss reduction strategy, which is different than most nutrient loss strategies in the Midwest, is we are actually looking at nutrient loss. We're not looking at reducing the amount of nutrients we apply. Our goal is to reduce those losses of nitrates and phosphates into the watershed without impacting yield, or without impacting production, or as impacting as little as possible. Our goal is to reduce, just like the previous speaker said, our goal is to reduce our loss by 45%. Our goal is to reduce 15% of our nitrogen loss. If we, in order to accomplish that, we only have to reduce 2% of the total pounds of nitrogen we sell in the state of Illinois. If you look at the total amount of pounds of actual N that we sell in the state, to achieve that goal, we only have to manage 2% of that. That's manageable. When you look at it, now, we sell a lot of nitrogen in the state, but that's a manageable goal. These are our tile locations. There we go. Throughout our 9-county area. Now, I serve a 10-county area, but the Farm Bureau manager up here in this county is not it, and he didn't want to be involved in the program. So this was in conjunction with Illinois Farm Bureau. They were one of our primary they were our primary funding source, and I'll talk a little bit about that. You know, we want to talk about partnerships and the things that we do as a group, as agriculture, to help stave off regulation. And we'll talk a little bit about our partnership farther along. I grew up right there in southwestern Gibson County, Indiana. So I've always been around the Wabash River. Now, the one thing I learned when I went from Indiana to Illinois is the Wabash River runs backwards in Illinois. In Indiana, it runs from right to left. In Illinois, it runs from left to right. And it took me a long time to get used to that. But those were our tiles. Now, down here, this is actually the Ohio River because we're below the confluence of the Wabash and the Ohio. So this is Kentucky. We've all seen these maps of the state of Illinois, the impaired watersheds, and our territory starts right here. So 7 of our 10 counties are impacted by the Umbrella watershed. And then we go down here into the Little Wabash watershed as well. And of course, the Wabash River is right here as the eastern border of the state of Illinois. So, you know, this is a huge part of our territory. Now, we've been told that we're far enough south with our soil types, that we're not contributing to this nitrogen loss. I want to show you in a minute that we are. We're not contributing what some of the other counties are, where they're mineralizing 3 pounds of nitrogen a day just through their soil mineralization, because we're not going to do that. I guarantee you we're not going to do that. We won't mineralize that much in a month. But we're still contributing to that loss. And if we're going to make that 15% loss in nitrates, we need to be involved as well. Project timeline, we wanted to start before the crop got planted. March 16th was our first trial, our first sample. Our last sample for the summer was taken July 20th. We have since started again the first week of September, and we've been monitoring what tiles are running. Only about a third of our tiles are running. We're in a pretty extended dry period for the fall, which is great for the farmers to get the harvest done, but the harvest is done. Our cover crops didn't come up the way they should have. We're really having some issues. We tested biweekly, and we took a total of 10 samples throughout the study. And those just show the dates of the samples. This was a huge deal to get farmers to agree to be a part of this, was grower confidentiality. I've got a legend that of the 37 fields that we monitor, they're each numbered, and that's the only identification anyone knows besides me. Now, we used intern labor to take the samples, and the interns we use, they understand the anonymity part of it. Any pictures that were taken, even with our Farm Bureau managers, were not to be taken to show specific landmarks, to show skylines, to show anything that could identify where those students were when they took the soil or the water samples. Growers really, you know, they had no idea what we were going to find. You know, we had a grower that was afraid we'd find 100 parts per million coming out of his tile. He wanted to know, but he didn't want anybody else to know. And I understand that. Only the stewards of the data, which was myself and the two interns that we had any idea where these fields were. Now, each Farm Bureau manager in their county knew where their four fields were. Now, we had one flyer. We had a fifth sample in one county because Edwards County, all those were soybean fields and one CRP field. So we couldn't do an in-watch study in those. So we added another field that was right on the Wabash Edwards County line that was technically in Wabash County, so we could do an in-watch study on that field and monitor soil ammonium and nitrate levels. And we really hadn't. I told each one of the managers, you just get me four fields, four tile drains. County like Richland County, I think we got all four tile drains in the county. They don't tile much. Wabash County, Gallatin County, White County, some of the other counties wasn't a problem. They tile a lot. So this is our field selection. The pale blue was corn, the purple was soybeans, and then we have one 15-acre CRP field. I wanted a control. I wanted a field that had not had anything applied to it for years that was tiled. Now, you talk about something tough to come up with. Who's going to tile a CRP field? But we found one. Field selection was tile type. And I didn't even think of this until we started getting test results back. And I'll explain that in a minute. But we've got about 35% of our tiles that were fed by risers and terraces. And that made a difference in a couple of instances, and we'll show you that in a minute. Cover crops, we had two fields that were covered. We gave them the benefit of the doubt and said, okay, we'll count the wheat crop that you're going to double crop and you're going to harvest as a cover crop. That would be really representative of what we do in southern Illinois. Less than 10% of our acres get cover crops till this year. And some of the things we showed in this study, we probably are sowing 10 times the amount of cover crops we've sowed in previous years. Less than 40% use a nutrient stabilizer. That floored me. We are the largest retailer of nitropyrin in the Midwest. The company, Wabash Valley, the company I work for. That surprised me that we were that low. Water sampling, here's what we tested for. We used Waters Lab in Owensboro, Kentucky. They said it's going to cost you $32 a sample if we test for ammonium, nitrate, and phosphorus, if we test for all of them. I said, all right, we'll test for all of them. Have no idea what it'll mean, but we're going to test for it. And on all but four of them, I still have no idea what it means. Soil test. We went ahead and did a soil test before the crop was up, and then we just took another soil test this week. don't really think we'll see any differences. Just wanted to have that in there. InWatch results, we did a total of 4 InWatch, but I didn't have the results back from the post-harvest InWatch until it was too late to get it in the slide. But here we've got the nitrate, and this is the ammonium at 0 to 1 foot, and each one of the colors is the date. So you can see as we get farther along, we're getting higher and higher nitrate levels. Now, one of the speakers yesterday talked about we don't see a correlation between, you know, we don't start off the bank, we don't start off the checking account with this many pounds of ammonium and this and 0 pounds of nitrate, and then as this goes down, this goes up. We don't see that. We don't see the spikes in ammonium, and we think that's a function of the soil test. Because our ammonium levels will stay flat, relatively flat, and our nitrate levels will still rise. So that nitrate's, it's converting, but we're not measuring the ammonium like we would like to. And then this is the 2-foot sample. And you can see we're building quite a bit of nitrate in that 12 to 24 inches. And then this is plant available in. And this last sample was taken the 20th of July. And you can see we're really starting to draw down our nitrates as we go into, with us, that would have been very early milk stage. We were pollinated by July 4th, so that was very early milk stage. So we're really starting to pull nitrogen hard. Then here's the interns on the job. And this picture here I took because they found a snake, and I screamed like a little girl and ran to the truck to get the camera. I don't like snakes. And then I went back and, well, never mind. The snake did not survive the experience. Study thresholds, very standard information. U.S. EPA drinking water standards are 10 parts per million. We wanted to see how close we were to that while it was coming out of our tile drains. Now, we can get by with 20 parts per million. That I can live with that because there's going to be a lot of water coming off the surface and coming out of areas that's not going to be carrying nitrates, and we're going to dilute it when we get a water or a rain event. So, but we wanted to just see where we were with 10 parts per million. And then 1 part per million standards for algae bloom. And then there's really no drinking water standards for phosphorus that I'm aware of. The other nutrients, we really couldn't find any rules or regulations or guidelines for what we would find. Test results, we got about exactly what we expected. It fluctuated a great deal throughout the test period, primarily with application and or a rain event. We could draw direct correlations between the spikes in nitrate levels and nitrogen fertilizer applications. For the most part, though, we still stayed below 10 parts per million. We did rise above that at times, and I'll explain those a little bit as we go along. Okay, here's our 9 counties, and that is the average nitrate loss level through the tile drain in parts per million for the entire trial. Now, you see this Hamilton County? We had 2 of those fields were neighboring fields, 7,000-pound liquid hog manure, injected in the fall every other year for 20 years. Now, the crazy thing is our residual soil test phosphate level was only about 250 pounds per acre. This was a 9 CEC and a 1% or less organic matter. So we ain't holding much. We go over here to Wayne County, very similar. That we were running poor CEC, poor organic matter, but this was primarily from applied fertilizer. Everything else, we stayed pretty much below the 10 parts per million as an average. Now, one thing I will say is Edwards County was all soybeans and CRP. It'll be very interesting, but even at that, we're still at 3 parts per million, just over 3 parts per million. Even though we're raising soybeans or a CRP field. Conclusions for in, we're really pretty good by accident. We've just, we're doing pretty good. We're doing all right. Multiple applications of nitrogen reduced end loss and increased nitrogen use efficiency. We had spikes during the growing season, but something would come along to flatten that out. You know, if we got a big rain event or if we had a big application, then we'd see some spikes. We found that the tile flow was a factor, but concentrations may have been high, but flow was very low. We actually used a formula that I'll show you in a second that was provided by the Illinois corn growers through their corn marketing group. And we really lost very little total pounds of N, even where we had high concentrations, except for the manure fields, because we were losing a couple of those manure fields. We were running 80, 90 parts per million, and we were running 12 to 15 gallons per minute. You're losing over a pound of nitrogen a day per acre. I got that guy's attention really quick because I said, Mr. Farmer, you're losing a couple hundred pounds of nitrogen a year at 30 cents a unit. That like adds up into real money. And I did get the post-harvest in watch on his field, and he still has in excess of 200 pounds per acre plant available in after he harvested the corn crop. And to add insult to injury, he went in and side dressed 100 pounds of actual N using UAN at V5. I told him, Mr. Farmer, we probably should have tissue tested, or you should have paid attention to our in watch rates, because you didn't need that. You threw 100 pounds in away. You threw $35 away. And we've got his attention. He's looking at cover crops. He's looking at stabilizers to put in his manure. He's got four or five big hog barns. He's going to try three or four different products in different areas. So we are getting their attention. And there needs to be a push. We need to make a push for stabilizers, which we are doing. And it comes off when a retailer talks about this, and we're just trying to sell them something. Well, that's my job. It's to sell them something. It's also my job as a CCA to sell them something that works and benefits their operation. Cover crops are another thing. I am a low-tech guy when it comes to cover crop. I want all 100% winter kill self-termination. So I'm a big oats and radish and turnip guy. I can live with cereal rye, but where I grew up in western Gibson County, we raised a lot of watermelons and a lot of cantaloupes. And I learned at a very early age that the side of the family that did that wasn't near as much fun as the side of the family that had tractors. So the corn growers is the direction I went, because I didn't like picking them watermelons up when it was 100 degrees and the sand was hot. And when we did show the growers that they had an excessive loss of N, they were very quick to adapt, to be ready to adapt practices. Now, this is one of the nitrogen load calculations, and you can see here on that 41-acre field, we were losing about a quarter of a pound of N a day with a 13 part per million at a flow rate of 1.5 gallons. The Edwards County field, field number 5, that was the CRP field, we had a 0.44 parts per million with a flow rate of 1.8. So really, when you get down here to significant figures, we were about 6 times the loss in the commercial field, but it still was not significant. And here's the facts for field number 37. Continuous corn for 18 years, which is really wild for southern Illinois. We don't do that. It's a 3% organic matter and a 25 CEC. We don't do that very often either. We applied DAP and some other things, some micronutrients and some potash and some humic acid and some other things in the fall of 2015, VRT with a radish cover crop. We didn't do an in-watch to see what was there, but we figured we had some residual nitrogen. We had a 1.27 nitrogen use efficiency with the applied nitrogen, and we had a 227 bushel yield in 2015. In 2016, the first nitrogen application was made March 27th, a 40-gallon of solution 28 with a product called Increase that I know very little about. That's not my product. This grower shops around, and this is what he bought the UAN solution, and it came with the Increase already in it. I know nothing about it other than it's a calcium nitrate product, I think. Had a huge nitrogen spike nitrate spike in the water after a rain event 3 weeks following the UAN application. The corn was planted March 28th, the day after the UAN application. We came back in and applied 195 pound of urea with Nutrisphere plus 50 pound of AMS May 16th. Corn was harvested August 24th. Field average was 201 bushels per acre. That was down 26 bushels per acre from last year. The main difference I see is we had no fungicide application this year. He was cutting corners. And if ever there was a year to not cut the fungicide, it was this year. And this is a misprint, but the nitrogen use sufficiency of 1.1 pounds of N per bushel. Now that's considering if we took it all off. We used every pound of nitrogen we applied. This is the tile loss graph for field 37. And right here is where we made the UAN application with the increase. And then we had a 9-day rain event with 3 inches of rain, and you can see how we spiked. Then we came back down, and right about there is where we made our application of urea and ammonium sulfate. Now, we run ammonium sulfate on almost every acre that we top dress with urea. And we safen the urea. We don't safen the ammonium sulfate because it's not necessary. We don't treat it. But we use one of two products. We either use urease inhibitor called Infix from Helena, or we use Nutrisphere for both or leaching, denitrification, and urease inhibition. And then you see we come over here and we flattened out. We didn't lose any more nitrogen to speak of. And that drop right there is when the tile quit running. So no water out, no nitrogen out. And that tile has not started running again yet. Now, we went back in and sowed another radish cover crop. And one of my daughters texted me this morning and said, "Dad, I drove by that field of that farmer." She don't know it's in the tile drain. And she said, "The volunteer corn's tasseling." So when you harvest August 24th and we have not had a frost yet, the volunteer corn's... So we got a great volunteer corn cover crop. And if it's tasseling, it's got enough meat to it, it's not going to go anywhere this winter. Now this is our in-watch study here. And you can see right here, see how our available nitrogen dropped so low? That's where our spike went up in our tile drain. We lost a lot of nitrogen out the tile. And then after we made our application of urea and ammonium sulfate, we went back up here. So then we come down here post-harvest, and we're down. That looks like we really dropped a lot. We've still got 72 pounds of plant available nitrogen. That's what we had then. Now, if you're going to grow a corn crop in August and September and October that's 5 feet tall and tasseling, you're sequestering a lot of that. And then we've got radishes out there that are about that big around and about that long. So we've sequestered some of that nitrogen. But what we're going to do is we're going to go in next spring and we're going to do an in-watch before we ever plant, and we're going to see exactly what we've got. Because if I take that 72 pounds off, then that drops my nitrogen use efficiency to 0.75. That's pretty good. I'm pretty happy with that. Now imagine if he'd have spent another 20 bucks and we'd have put a fungicide on there and he'd have made 250 bushel corn, we'd have been down to about 0.6. My whole mantra with these farmers is, let's haul it off in grain because you get paid for that, even if it's $3.50 a bushel. If you let it go down the ditch, guess what? You're not getting paid for it. Field Edwards County number 5, 5 years in conservation reserve program, no added nitrogen or phosphorus for 5 years. Showed very little loss in the N or P, either one, indicating the long-term perennial grass cover crop was working. The soil P level was within usable agronomic parameters of 43 pounds per acre. It's a pretty fertile field, and we're not losing anything. But we did continue to mineralize nitrogen. Field comparisons, there's the average parts per million for the life of the trial from each field, from 37 and field 5. Now, if we'd went to Field 15 in Hamilton County, this number would have been about 23. So that's what our average parts per million loss was. Phosphorus parts per million. Now, I told you, I was going to tell you a little bit about riser pipes and terraces. Lawrence County. Anybody here from Illinois? Okay. Lawrence County is the most diverse livestock county in the state of Illinois. They got everything from ostriches to turkeys. Everything in between. Hogs, cattle, sheep, goats, rabbits. You name it, they got it. So what do those things do? They produce manure. Two of these fields had tile risers, and they put 3 tons of turkey litter per acre, and then we got a 2-inch rain. Well, where do you think all that phosphate went? Went right down the riser pipe and right out the tile drain, and we monitored it. So this guy really likes his turkey manure, and I don't blame him. It does a great job. His soil test levels show it. But we're probably going to have to look at a cover crop or doing something a little different, like incorporating, before we continue to do that. And then most of the others, like Gallatin County here, there's a lot of sand there. Pretty sandy. Very fertile. Very, very high producing. But also a lot of irrigation. You get over here to White County, and the area that most of our White County tests were in were also irrigated. We were pleasantly surprised by our phosphorus levels, and we stayed well below the 0.1 part per million for the EPA for algae blooms. We're doing a pretty good job of managing our phosphorus through the tile lines. We all know that we're pretty hilly in southern Illinois in most places, so we need to address erosion. The Crawford County Soil and Water Conservation District is wanting me to come in and do a report for them. And talk about the importance of structure, of reducing runoff, and doing a better job of managing our siltation and that type of runoff into our streams. And we did the phosphorus load calculation, and there was no significant difference between field 37 that's in what I would consider intense production with continuous corn and the Edwards County 5 with the CRP. Potassium, I have no idea what that means. No clue. But that's what we're losing. An average of about 1.25 parts per million. Test results for sulfate kind of floored me. We had some as high as 800 parts per million. And sulfur's an anion, flows freely in the soil, we all know that. But I didn't know there was that much in there to lose. And I really can't correlate this to anything, because if I was going to look at a progressive area, and all these guys are progressive farmers, or they wouldn't have been in this study, but Gallatin, Wabash, and White would probably be three of my most progressive locations that run lots of sulfur. Now, we do apply mostly sulfate sulfur. We don't apply very much elemental, because I don't like waiting 10 or 11 or 14 months before it's available. So we run a lot of sulfate, either through gypsum or as ammonium sulfate or K-Mag. We run a good bit of K-Mag because of our low CECs. And our conclusion was, and actually I called a guy that I think knows quite a bit about this, but mostly I think we just pulled this out of our butt. It mineralized because we had a mild winter, and we just continued to mineralize sulfur, and we continued to lose it, so it was readily available to get out through the tile line. I called Willoughby, Randy, and I bounced this off him, or I emailed him. He said, sounds good. So we're not sure if, you know, like radishes will sequester sulfur and calcium. We wonder if that's not a better way to do it. But the other thing we wanted to make sure of is we're not missing anything agronomically on sulfur applications for our growers. They need to know that there's a possibility they're losing sulfur. Micronutrients, we really didn't come to a good conclusion other than we know we're losing boron. because it's also an anion and free floating in the soil. And I would agree with earlier presentations today that we need to make multiple applications. Down in our part of the world, a soil application of more than a quarter of a pound of boron a year is pretty hard on our corn germination, so we stay away from that. We do a lot of foliar and in-crop boron applications. We put a little boron in sometimes with our urea and ammonium sulfate that we top dress. And then we also do, we don't do a standalone foliar on anything, but we do throw a little bit of boron in foliar occasionally. And we have seen good results from that, especially at pollination time. Overall conclusions, we found out about what I expected to find on the load and nitrogen in the water. It was lower than expected, phosphorus as well. It was an excellent study to just show a grower and say, okay, here's what's going on your farm or your neighbor's farm or farms in the county, and this is what we're finding, and this is what you can do to maybe save yourself some money, increase your return on investment, and help protect the environment, and help us toward that nutrient loss reduction strategy. We learned that multiple applications of nitrogen are best. We've been doing that for about the last 7 or 8 years. We do multiple applications. We try to put potash, especially on in front of the soybean crop. You know, down in southern Illinois, I don't know how it is the rest of the state, but our farmers want to make one trip with an application rig every 2 years, or every three if they can get by with it. But we found that feeding each crop right ahead of it, especially with potassium on soybeans, and then after some of Dr. Belo's research, we're also, this year we started, the last 2 years, especially this year, we've really started getting a small amount of phosphorus out there, 50 to 75 pounds ahead of the soybean crop. Now, we don't do the deep strip placement like he does. We just broadcast. The bad thing about my neck of the woods, if you get over about 10 inches deep, you run the risk of pulling up an oil flow line. So we got a few oil fields. What can we take away? Our growers should feel pretty confident that they're doing a pretty good job. But with a little knowledge and a little training and adapting some new practices, we can get a whole lot better. And we can get better not only for the environment, but for profitability for the grower. And in these times, you know, with, I know it's hard for me to say $3.50, 60 cent corn's tough, because I can remember back in the 80s when my dad sold corn for $1.35 a bushel. Multiple applications in cover crops. All these things are things that we've used to reduce nutrient loss. Tillage practices. You know, we learned yesterday about the no-till. We need to be a little more diligent in our soil testing, that we need to maybe take some more cores to see what's actually out there. What's next? Each grower and the partner received a copy of this study, and then they're each receiving a case study that I'm doing for their individual farm. In aggregate form, this is going to be presented to a lot of different people. We're already doing a lot of local organizations, Kiwanis, Rotary, things like that. And then our partners have been very involved with what's going on. Future plans, we'd all like to see it continue. Right now we're waiting to see at the end of October or the end of November what Illinois Farm Bureau decides to do with their grant money. This past year they had $100,000 available for their grants for these kind of studies. We applied for $16,000. They had $315,000 in total applications, and we got $15,000. So I was pretty pleased with the fact that they saw the value in what we were trying to do. This is our team of partners, and this is the most important slide I can show you. Wabash Valley Service Company is the company that I work for. We supplied the expertise in how to handle the and the coordination of the project. And then Illinois Farm Bureau provided the majority of the funding for the tests. We supplied the interns. We supplied the vehicle for them to get, you know, to use to take around and all that stuff. The Illinois Corn Marketing Board, they gave us a grant for equipment, for, you know, stopwatch, collection material. We had to buy each one of the interns a set of hip boots and just things like that. GrowMark, through the intern program at Wabash Valley College, they supplied 50% of the funding for the interns. And over the last 25 years, I've worked with about 75 or 80 interns through that Wabash Valley College program. Some of those go on to U of I, some of those go on to Carbondale, Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. Some of them go on to Murray State down in Kentucky. Waters Agricultural Lab in Owensboro, Kentucky, they gave us a 25% discount on all our testing since it was they contributed. A&L Lab, they pulled all the InWatch sites. They actually contracted and went in and did that. Illinois Council on Best Management Practices, Dan Schaefer, did a great job in helping us make sure we got our, they funded the InWatch studies 100%. IFCA also helped with that. And then Helena Chemical Company also helped with the tissue test that we took so that we knew what was going on in the plant. Now, the really funny thing about the tissue tests, the only thing that was consistent was every tissue test came back on corn, came back deficient in boron. Grossly deficient in boron. So that was kind of cool. And where we didn't see a sulfur deficiency if we in the tissue, if we added sulfur, we still saw a yield increase. Less than 20% of our tissue tests come back, and I do hundreds and hundreds of tissue tests a year. Less than 20% come back deficient in sulfur. But if we make a sulfur application to corn, we always get a return on a positive return on investment. These were my two interns, Brianna Ritzert from Mount Vernon, Indiana, and she's a sophomore at Wabash Valley College now, and she's a great kid. She's done with another intern this fall. She's continued the project. And Lindsay, she moved on to Southern. She's a junior down there, and I'm meeting with her Friday. We're trying to get her an internship, a good internship for next year. And I'm really pleased to see young individuals like this excited about nutrient management. And then this was the contact information. Myself, I'm the steward of the data. And then Doug Anderson from Wayne and White County Farm Bureau, he's the manager in those two counties. He was a project coordinator. And basically, he had the checkbook and paid all the bills. Any questions? Well, thank you very much for your attention.
I'd like to make an announcement. Thank you all. Thank you all for attending. I was just going to make an announcement that tomorrow at, if I can find it, tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. we've got a business meeting for the Solid Water Management Professionals Group, the community. I'm the vice leader or leader of vice or whatever you want to call me. And so I hope to see you there tomorrow. And just discuss ideas, plans for next year. Thank you.